And this is Shattering Myths. This is the program where we expose the beguiling and destructive myths that are associated with religion, with politics, and with patriotism, as well as with military and economic schemes. This morning, we're going to focus on the latter of those. Those who listened yesterday know that I shared a quote that I rather liked from an article that was sent to me yesterday called The Declaration of Dependence. Well, we are fortunate this morning in that we have the author of that article, as well as the author of a great number of books on the U.S. economy. His most recent being The Great Debasement, The 100-Year Dying of the Dollar, and How to Get America's Money Back. I'm speaking of Craig Smith. So, Craig, it's my pleasure to have you as a guest on the program.
Got it. Good morning. Good to be with you.
Craig is also, for those interested, the chairman and the founder of Swiss America. Swiss America is a trading company specializing in gold and commodities, particularly precious metals and coins. It's not often, Craig, that I get to recommend something as part of this program that I actually use myself, but most of my portfolio happens to be in gold. I am a student, as you are, of what our government has done to destroy the value of its currency, and feel that gold is among the few viable hedges against the destructive forces of our government.
Well, obviously, your position has been well rewarded if you look at what's happened to gold over the last several years. And, of course, you know as well as I do, Yada, that it's not so much that gold has gone up in value as it's been the value of the dollar has dropped, so therefore it takes more dollars to buy gold.
Yeah, I don't think the value of gold has changed at all, Craig. I think that the value of gold would buy as much today as it would buy an Imperial Rome. You would get, for the same amount of gold, you'd buy a suit and some shoes today that you would buy some sandals and a toga a couple of thousand years ago.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And that's the beautiful part about gold, of course. It maintains its buying power. And, of course, in America, we get so enthralled with return, you know, and yet Will Rogers, the famous American humorist, said, "I'm not so concerned about the return on my money as I am about the return of my money." That's what we have to really realize in this country. That's why, as you know, Yada, people 20, 30 years ago that planned very satisfactory retirements that were all set for the rest of their life are now finding themselves having to go back to work because as the dollar continues to drop in value, their cost of living increases, and they're finding out that a retirement they planned 20 years ago that was more than satisfactory to retire won't even pay the land taxes and put food on the table in some cases. So it's been a process that's been going on in this country. It started in 1912, 100 years ago, when Woodrow Wilson took office and progressive politicians decided that an elastic money system could actually accommodate the welfare state that we've created in America, the cradle to grave mentality. And then, of course, in 1913, Mr. Woodrow Wilson allowed the Federal Reserve to be put into place and the 16th Amendment to collect federal income tax. And we believe that started a clock, Yada, that has, for the last 100 years, systematically debased the value of the U.S. currency. It's not going to stop. It's going to continue infinitum because it's how the system's designed. And until we realize that those progressive values and those progressive strategies are failed policies that ultimately will hit a wall, we're not going to change. And unfortunately, it's probably going to take hitting a wall before we do change directions.
Yeah, that's probably the only place where we would differ, Craig, is that I don't see any hope. I think we have gone well past the point of no return in terms of what we have done to this country. But let's go back to 1913. One of the things that I found interesting as I studied the 16th Amendment, which established the federal income tax, is that the nation had attempted briefly an income tax previously, but the Supreme Court had ruled the income tax unconstitutional. So right. If you look at the founding documents of this country, those documents dictate that a income tax is unconstitutional.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's a fair argument, but most people have to realize why we truly instituted an income tax. See, most people think, Yada, that it's merely to generate revenue so that we can pay the bills. Well, as you know, because you've studied this, that's not the case. We had tariffs and excises that more than enough covered the bills as long as we kept the size of government small. The reason, in my opinion, that we instituted the income tax had a second very important component, and that was that it assured the long-term value of the U.S. dollar as it related to a viable currency. In other words, if I'm forced to pay your weekly wages in whatever, in puka shells, all of a sudden puka shells have value. So if you say to every American that you're going to have to pay income tax every year and you're going to have to do it in the form of dollars, you have to work to get those dollars, all of a sudden those dollars now have value. And that's the bigger issue. You had a Federal Reserve that could create money. You had a federal income tax that could collect that money. And it, basically what you did was you set up a system where one person can pump the money in and one person can pump the money out and supposedly control the economy. Well, that's not a free market, Yada. You and I both know that.
Well, it's actually kind of an interesting, just a thought here. The realization, and I had not connected, and obviously we all know that 1913 was the red letter date where progressive income tax was made constitutional through the 16th Amendment, and the Federal Reserve clandestinely was formed as a central bank, and that those two things essentially doomed America's future. But what I had not tied together is what you just did. And it reminds me sort of medieval Europe and the union of church and state, where the church says, we will tell the people that God has chosen you to be the king so long as you dictate to the people that we are the only lawful religion. And so collectively, they made each other such that they were in total and complete control and could have no rival. By imposing the federal income tax in dollars and then giving the Fed unconstitutional rights to increase and to print money and dollars, they made what is a debt instrument. The U.S. currency is not an asset. It is a liability. That's why it's a promissory note. They made a debt instrument valuable. It was really quite a scheme.
A rather incestuous relationship, indeed. And this is what's funny. If you look through history, there was a brilliant piece written in 1946 by, at the time, the head of the Federal Reserve, Beardsley Rummel. Mm-hmm. In this article, it was for American Affairs magazine. The title was "Taxes Are Obsolete," and what his argument was that he no longer needed to collect taxes because he could basically collect the taxes through creating money. And therefore, let's just do away with taxes because I have the ability to create money, and therefore we'll just devalue the population's money and we collect the taxes that way and they don't even know they're being collected. And it's really interesting because, and I've never thought about it, it's a great connection. What you talk about in years ago in Europe is exactly what's happening in America today. And I'm not sure we disagree as it relates to it can be fixed. I believe the dollar is doomed. I believe just like in America, there were years ago we used pine tree shillings, then we used continentals. Mm-hmm. Well, those are both gone. Now we use dollars. There's a day coming very soon where we will no longer be using dollars. What it is, I don't know. Maybe it'll be a ghost money. Maybe it'll be a computer blip. But ultimately, it will be designed, and I think you and I would agree on this, to steal what little wealth is still in the hands of the American people and put it in the hands of federal government.
Federal government and also international government and international bankers, a combination of those things. I actually anticipate that the imposition of the new currency will be manifest through two means. One is that the existing currency will be realized to be worthless because we have so inflated the money supplies to make the existing currency worthless. I believe right now it has 2% of the value it had when the Federal Reserve and the federal income tax were imposed in 1913, so that it's already lost 98% of its value. It will soon become worthless because we cannot sustain our national debt. We will no longer be able to borrow the money to continue to sustain it. But I think the second thing that's going to happen is that the progressives, if you, as you call them, liberals, those who wish to collectivize everything, will essentially say to those who owe money that you don't, if you accept our new currency, we'll wipe out and wipe off your debts. You agree to accept our new currency, and your mortgages, your debts, your loans will be considered paid, will be considered wiped off the books, because in essence they don't have any value anyway. And so I think that there will be incentives for people to accept the new currency, and it will be an international currency as opposed to an American currency.
Yeah, could very easily be the case. Obviously, the simplest way to get a person to accept the currency is to demand that they pay their taxes in that currency. And, of course, if you don't pay the taxes, well, then they'll confiscate your land. If you don't pay your income taxes, you'll be put in jail. So, I mean, there are ways to get people to accept whatever you choose to use as the currency, especially when we're in the shape that we are. And you're right about the debt. And most people think of the debt as just $16 trillion. You and I know that that's not even close. It's probably
not even close.
It's probably closer to $100 trillion, and I think it may even be more. And you and I know we both have business backgrounds. Think about it. If a corporation ever gets that deep into debt, is there any possible way, Yada, for that corporation to bail themselves out, no matter how much they grow? It's impossible.
No, it's impossible. And what we're talking about here is that while the traditional national debt, as we refer to it, is now $16.3 trillion, and it has grown from $10 trillion to $16.3 trillion and is guaranteed to be at over $17 trillion within a year, just over the past 5 years.
Right.
The reality is that we have what's called unfunded mandates. Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid are Ponzi schemes. They make promises to make payments to people from non-existent funds. And currently, if you look at Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security and you go out some 20 years, you'll find that there is some $40 million of unfunded mandate there, which is an obligation of the U.S. government to pay, but there are no funds to make that payment. Therefore, that is a liability. Therefore, it is a debt. And you have to add at least $40 trillion to the existing $16 trillion even approximate the size of our federal deficit. And when we get back after the break, Craig, I'd like to speak, have you speak to why that debt can no longer be serviced as we pass, just in the standard debt model, $16 trillion and we pass $20 trillion. Why it will become impossible to service that debt. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We have as a guest today Craig Smith, who is the founder of Swiss America. He is also an expert on the U.S. economy. Craig, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about in this segment is that I made a statement yesterday, and I don't think I explained it very well, and I'm confident that you are more knowledgeable on this subject than I am, and you're certainly articulate. I'm going to share the four reasons why I think that the U.S. debt is unserviceable, that as we pass $17 trillion and reach upwards of $20 trillion, which we will in the next 4 years, that the debt becomes unserviceable, and if the debt is unserviceable, the country is bankrupt. It ceases to be a sovereign nation. The first of those is that the more money the government is required to borrow, the more difficult it becomes for businesses to borrow money and therefore to invest in their businesses and expand. The federal government is competing with individuals and with businesses for funds. The second of those is the more that our debt rises, the riskier that investment becomes, and the fewer people there are that are willing to loan a risky enterprise such as the United States money. The third reason is that to increase the debt, we have to increase the money supply, making the money less valuable, requiring interest rates to rise. And as interest rates rise, then we add another $1 trillion to the national debt just on the service of the existing debt. And that $1 trillion of service on the existing debt becomes such a burden that it makes it impossible for the nation to borrow enough money to service its debt. And the last is related to all of these things, the currency devaluation, which requires ever higher interest rates because those providing the loans recognize that 10 years out, unless they receive extraordinarily high interest rates, that the money that they are paid back for their loan will be worth a fraction of what it was when they originally loaned the money, making it impossible for America to service its debt as we now pass 105 to 110% of GDP and reach upwards of 150% of GDP in the next 4 years. Did I miss anything, or is there a better way to articulate that?
No, I think that analysis is pretty much spot on. And I think what your listeners have to do is look at what the common thread is amongst all those areas. You know, when you squeeze corporations for capital by the government sucking up all the capital, right, or you make that investment more risky, or you're going to devalue the currency, the only incentive you can get foreigners to lend you money is to continue to increase the amount of interest you pay.
Right.
Because the riskier the investment, the higher the return has to be, or you won't attract capital. And of course, it's a double-edged sword, because if you squeeze all that capital away from businesses, you keep them from growing. Thus, you keep them from generating more revenue to the Treasury. So it just snowballs upon itself.
So it's not just the interest, and it's not just the interest on the new loans. It's that so many of our loans are short-term, our T-bills are short-term. It's the realization that you're now going to have to be paying 5 and perhaps 10% interest on the existing $16 trillion worth of debt, adding another upwards of $1.5 trillion to already a trillion-dollar annual deficit. And so you double or triple the amount of debt that you have to service.
Right. That's correct. And in the process of doing that, you devalue the money, so you exacerbate the problem of the long-term liabilities, because today, let's say they're $100 trillion, and with cost of living adjustments over the next 15 years, they become $150 trillion. It just snowballs upon itself. But that's the reason why we cannot see. Most people, I believe, Yada, look back at 1979, 80, and 81, and they say, well, this is a simple problem to fix. You know, Mr. Reagan came in, they tightened the money supply, they raised interest rates to 22%, we beat inflation, everything came back into adjustment. Well, yes, it worked rather effectively. But at that time, we had $825 billion worth of federal debt, national debt.
Right.
Not $17 trillion worth of national debt, 20 times the size. So,
right.
So the dynamic now is such that I really consider it a little snowball rolling down a hill in Colorado. And by the time it gets at the bottom, it's this giant snowball that can wipe out a whole town. And that's what most people don't understand. Interest rates, and most people understand this, understand markets. Markets ultimately get it right. They will correct, and they will correct to protect themselves. And right now, instead of having a synergy between the federal government and businesses like we see happening in Europe and other parts of the world, you actually have businesses at odds with the federal government.
Correct.
We're setting ourselves up for a collapse. I would just change one of your terminologies, though.
Okay.
You said it would bankrupt a nation. There's no such thing as bankrupting a nation. We, the people, are the nation. So you bankrupt its citizens, because as long as they can keep taking money from your labor, they are, in theory, never bankrupt. They bankrupt you. And that's my big concern, Yada, is that I don't think the average American realizes they are a target of their government now. They are seen as a way to get out of this. Unfortunately, you and I both know it can't be gotten out of. So they're going to squeeze you until there's nothing left.
All right, we'll return to this discussion after the break. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. We are fortunate to have Craig Smith, the founder of Swiss America. You can reach him at buygold.com. As our guest, Craig is an expert on all things related to the U.S. economy. I have actually known of Craig for a very long time. We have a mutual friend, Jerry McLaughlin, who is the founder of Special Guests. Jerry McLaughlin is the perhaps the most influential person in talk radio, both on television and radio, that no one's ever heard of, except for the people who benefit from Jerry's services. And so both Craig and I have known Jerry for a number of years. So this is the first time we've talked, but we have a mutual friend and therefore have a history together. Yeah, Craig, one of the things I want to talk about is you moved us in this direction, I think it's important for folks to know that America has become a dependence nation. Now, over 50% of Americans not only pay no tax, but they actually receive benefits, financial benefits from the government. But what you were inferring in the last segment is that is going to come at a tremendous consequence. The very people who are now dependent on and relying on government are going to find that very government is unworthy, is not worthy of their reliance. It is not dependable, because that country, that government, is going to, in the very near future, find itself unable to continue to pay the Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and welfare of its dependence.
Oh, I agree completely. I mean, in our book, the Great Debasement, Chapter 6, we start with the end of the Republic, and it goes into the first of many tipping points we talk about in our society. And we started the whole chapter out with a quote from Benjamin Franklin when he said that when the people find that they can vote themselves money, that will herald the end of the Republic. And you're right.
Yes,
we're a 50-50 nation, according to Niles Ferguson over in Harvard.
Yes.
And now if you look at 35% of the GDP is now really federal, state, and local government spending, you come to realize that we used to be a nation that 50 cents of every dollar during John Kennedy's term went to pay for our national defense. Today, two-thirds of every dollar we spend goes to transfer payments of, as you said, you know, welfare, housing, Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security. We can't sustain this. And when you have more people riding in the cart than you have pulling the cart, the math just doesn't work.
And that's correct. It's the socialist idea, Craig, that from each according to their ability and to each according to their need, which is wealth redistribution. It's the government policy of America today. The reason that it ultimately fails is twofold. One is there is no incentive for those who make money to continue to make money if the money they make is confiscated from them. And second, when you establish a system, an economic system that is based on removing incentive and based upon central control, you make it essentially impossible for even those who are willing to be productive to be productive. And so you create a scenario where not only historically have we found in every case that the socialistic concept of from each according to their ability and to each according to their need, every place it's been tried, it has failed. But what we see is that it is impossible for it to ever succeed. And so this very system is destined to fail.
Oh, absolutely. I would agree completely with you. And look, we saw the progressive move in 1912. It really put itself on steroids under Franklin Roosevelt. I mean,
correct.
Remember his quote, tax and tax, spend and spend, elect and elect. I mean, he basically said that this is how the system will work. We'll basically buy ourselves power infinitum.
I did some research yesterday in anticipation of being able to talk with you today. And you made a comment in the first segment that the U.S. government now is at war with business. In fact, the American people, at least 50% of the American people, are at war with business. If you listen to any of the campaign ads, the villain was always corporate America. And yet corporate America is the only source of revenue that is responsible for all of this wealth redistribution in the country. It's the only source of revenue for the government. Directly and indirectly, it's only corporate America, businesses. But one of the things that's happened is that, particularly with the Obama administration, America has gone to war with business. Now, you just mentioned FDR. FDR turned what would have been a year-and-a-half recession in 1929 into the Great Depression because he went to war against business. What he did is he took the top rate of the federal income tax, which at the time was 25%. It had actually been lowered to 25% for a decade, and America during that decade experienced the fastest economic growth of any country in the history of the world. FDR came to power. He took that rate up to 93%, and he stifled everything. And it is what's turned the recession into the Great Depression, was the increase in corporate and personal income tax.
Sure, and that's exactly what this anti-capitalist administration that just got another 4 years wants to do. I mean, they want to raise taxes, and I'm glad you brought up how Roosevelt extended the Great Depression, because you're absolutely right. People forget the stock market crash in 1929, then the markets recovered into the early 30s. Roosevelt calls a banking holiday, recalls the gold. By 1938, we had a complete collapse of the industrial base in this nation. And I always argued that Roosevelt didn't get us out of the Great Depression with WPA and all. He did it when we went back to war and our factories went to work and our women took over the factories. The men went and fought a war and we became a productive nation again. And yet we want to herald Franklin Roosevelt as a saint. I would argue he was the most evil president we've ever had. I don't make many friends saying that, but I believe history will prove that out. And we refer to it in our book as donkey drag. You basically have 25% of the economic growth in our country right now, in our opinion, is affected by what we call this donkey drag, which is basically, we named it after the Democratic Party. They are literally putting anchors on this economy and holding it back. Today I'll be with Neil Cavuto this afternoon, and we'll be talking about it from a CEO standpoint. I'm chairman of Swiss now. My CEO has to have his budgets in to me by December 15th for the board to go ahead and authorize everything for 2013. Well, here's what's interesting. How does he deal with the fiscal cliff, Yada? We don't know if we're going off of it, if we're not going off. Odds say one in five chances we will. But he can't anticipate that these politicians will come together. So he's going to have to set his budgets in 2013, set up a defensive posture against the government who's asking him to hire people and grow his business to pay more revenue. This is the most anti-capitalist administration we've ever had. And how Mr. Obama could get reelected with the numbers where we are economically and the direction that we're taking that's clearly unconstitutional, Yada, is beyond my comprehension.
Yeah, we talked about this in our program yesterday. As a man that has never worked for a private business a single day in his life, never even served French fries at McDonald's, and had absolutely no experience, has done everything wrong relative to the economy, and Americans are so ignorant, so irrational, and now actually so immoral that they reelected this man. We have Larry on the phone calling in from Florida. Craig, he has a question for you. Go ahead, Larry.
You know, speaking of being at war with business, you know, I was reading today on a blog that went by. There was a gentleman that called in a radio show, actually, in Nevada, and he has a business of 122 people, and the day after the election, he got rid of 22 of them. It seems to me we're going to see higher unemployment as taxation goes up for having employees. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, the lower you have the tax rate, the more revenues come in.
Supply side.
To that, Craig.
Oh yeah, that's Larry's right. That's always been the case. Every time we've lowered the taxes and we've widened the base, revenues have exploded in our treasury.
Yeah.
And look, we're faced with this too. I think many businessmen are faced with this. And while Larry was talking, I remembered a quote that we put in the book by Ayn Rand, and I think that book is probably more relevant today than it was when it was written in the 50s. But it reminded me of something. I'd like to read you this quote, if I may, Yada.
Sure.
Because money is the barometer of society's virtue. When you see that trading is done not by consent but by compulsion, when you see that in order to produce, you need to obtain permission from men who produce nothing, when you see that money is flowing to those who deal not in goods but in favors, when you see that men get richer by graft and by pull than work, and your laws don't protect you against them, but protect them against you. When you see corruption being rewarded and honesty becoming a self-sacrifice, you may know that your society is doomed. And I think that's true. And look, I hate, and I know you, Yada, you believed in the greatness of America and its business. But unfortunately, men like you and I have to sit and analyze this stuff and say, we are doomed unless we do a 180-degree turn. And after this last election, there's no way we're willing to make that turn, Yada. So it's just common sense to say that we are headed for a major league crisis and a huge change in this country.
Yeah, it's the only place we disagree, and we disagree here only modestly, Craig, in that I have spent a fair amount of time researching this, and I came to the conclusion that that there are some 100 things that America would have to do that are 180-degree reverse course for it to survive, none of which we're going to do. But just on the deficit alone, America would have to reduce the size of the federal government by 50% in real numbers, by 50% immediately, and reduce all taxes by the same amount to have any chance of actually being able to reduce its deficit. And if we do not reduce the size of the government by 50%, state, local, and federal governments by 50% immediately, then there is no way to resolve the deficit. And since we're not going to do that, we're not going to even reduce the size of government by 5%, much less by 50%. It means that the problem cannot be resolved. We have long passed the point of no return. In this regard, that's the thing that is the greatest myth in America today is this dependence mentality has not only exacerbated the problem, but the very people who have become the parasites are going to find that the body that they have been sucking dry is actually dead. Have long since killed the host from which they are feeding. And that tells us that government is unreliable, especially now, the American government. We'll return for our final segment of the news hour of Shattering Myths. After the break, we are with Craig Smith. I am your host, Yada. Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. We are joined today by Craig Smith. Craig is the founder of Swiss America. They are a business that recommends people invest in gold, which is probably the only viable hedge these days, along with silver, to the destruction of the U.S. dollar that is being caused both by the U.S. government, by the Federal Reserve, and by the voters of the United States who continue to vote for politicians that are set upon making America a socialist wealth redistribution country and have effectively destroyed its economic viability. Craig, you mentioned something in the last segment that is I found confirmed. I had heard many people say, and I certainly watched it under the Reagan administration, and Reagan did some things well and many things poorly, but he embraced what was called the Laffer Curve, a USC professor, whereby the research that Mr. Laffer provided was that if you lower taxes, particularly in capital gains, but if you lower taxes across the board, what you will find is that investment increases, the economy grows, and that the government on lower tax rates actually receives more money. And during the Reagan years, this proved to be true. What I did not know is that there was a long historical precedent for that conclusion. And so over the last couple of days, I've spent most of my time correlating taxation with deficits and with economic either prosperity or decline. And thus far, I have made it from 1913 and considered every year from 1913 all times of economic boom, all recessions, all depressions, all tax national taxation decisions through 1975. And what I have found is, without exception, every time the tax rate was lowered, we had economic prosperity and the deficit went down. And every time the tax rates were raised, we entered a recessionary period and the deficit grew. So this election campaign, which Romney failed to articulate well and Obama lied about, that we have tried the this trickle-down strategy, as he would call it, where you lower taxation and you actually reduce the debt, it's not only historically accurate, there is no exception for that rule from 1913 all the way through 1975.
That's correct. And if you look at the period when Mr. Reagan took over, 1981 through 88, you'll find that the only reason deficits went up was because the Democratic Congress broke their word that they gave to the president when he raised rates at the end to cut their government spending. So you're absolutely right. And we've written about this in the book, which by the way, I forgot all about, Yada, that if your listeners, the publisher has given me a couple hundred copies to give away on this program. If they'd like to call 800-289-2646 and mention that they're listening to Shattering Myths with Yada, they'll actually send them out a complimentary copy of the book. There's no postage or anything. They're covering it through the firm. So
wow, thank you.
If you'd like a copy of the book, you go to Amazon and, of course, buy it. But if you're a listener to Yada, just call 800-289-2646. Mention that you heard it on the program, and they'll send a copy of the book out. And you can read it for yourself because your research is spot on. You cannot find a time. And think about it. It makes sense, Yada, because if you reduce rates, you put more money in people's pockets. They either spend it or they put it in the bank, which then gives banks money to lend out to create businesses. I mean, we need to reduce the government. You said something earlier. It's so important. If we could reduce the government and get it back to the size that it really should be, we could be, again, one of the greatest prospering nations in the world. Unfortunately, I don't think we have the political will to do it.
No, because we'd have to reduce Social Security and Medicaid and Medicare by at least 50%. As it relates to America's defense, which was a major contributor to why Reagan ultimately did not succeed at the level that he should have because he invested too much in defense,
sure.
America could resolve. Let me just finish one thought. America could become, guarantee its freedom and make it impossible for any nation to invade or occupy America simply by honoring the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. We actually could reduce defense by 90% and actually be a safer, more free, and more viable country than we are now. And so the answer is to radically reduce the size of government, all aspects of government.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. And the reality is, you said something earlier, you said Social Security is a Ponzi scheme.
Yes.
Just like any Ponzi scheme, what has to happen? When Bernie Madoff was caught, the people who put money in with him had to be told, yes, you put your money in, yes, you worked hard for it, yes, it belonged to you, but he stole it. And that's what happened.
Right.
That's why we can't maintain Social Security. It was stolen by your government.
Yes, all the money that has been taken thus far has been squandered by an untrustworthy government. Craig, it's been a thrill to have you as a guest. I hope you will join us again. This is Shattering Myths. Join us in the second hour as we turn to Yahweh's teaching.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of longevity.